My sobriety date's February 15th of 2008. And it still amazes me that at certain times during the day, I'll realize just how I have absolutely no idea how I'm here right now. You know, and that's at the my home group's a 7109 group of Upper Darby. It's right next to 69th Street in Philadelphia. And above it, it says, "But for the grace of God." And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't believe in God. I had no idea what that saying was. All the old timers and other people would just repeat it because everybody liked to say it, you know, "But for the grace of God, but for the grace of God." And today I have an understanding of that, you know, and it's not up here and it's right here. And I'm staring out of this plane and I'm like, yeah, I'm flying to Tampa to go to some AA convention. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like from where I came from, like, that's just really absurd. So, you know, 15 minutes is going to be tough for me, but I'll squeeze it in. I started drinking and getting involved with a lot of other things at a young age. the end of fifth grade, I picked up. And now when I came to AA, I got sober when I was a week after I turned 25. I've had some experiences before, 30 days, you know, a meeting here and there. Never wanted to listen to anything. You know, didn't really believe alcohol was my problem. Like, if I could get rid of some other things and I could drink successfully, and my life would be great. That was what my mind told me, that if I could drink like everybody else, that somehow I would have this magical life. And I never picked up a big book. I never got a sponsor. You know, really the obsession of alcoholism was all over me. I thought, like, I could drink O'Doul's, like, that somehow that would work. I thought that drinking on the weekend and going to AA during the week would somehow make me be able to control my alcoholism. The very first meeting I came to, I remember driving my buddy to the meeting, and I was, like, 17 years old, and I seriously thought that everybody was drinking in the meeting. I remember saying to him, the cops should just sit out front of it. It would be like shooting fish in a barrel, you know. And that was like my mindset towards it. And this time when I came in, alcohol had truly become AA's best advocate for me. Like I said, I came around and I didn't even believe people were sober 20 years. You know, I thought they were lying. It didn't make sense to me. How can you not drink, you know, because in my life, there was always a period of time and the anxiety would build up, or, you know, the girlfriend that left, you know, I'd fix everything back up and then I'd drink again, or I'd get arrested and I'd try to repair everything and then I would drink again. And it would always be that sense of ease and comfort that the doctor's opinion talks about, you know, that I need that. You know, that's what builds up inside of me, this disease, and it just right away, alcohol, this is going to take it away. And you know, so when I came in, I ended up getting a sponsor, and looking back, for me, like, I was able to connect with that fear that we talk about, like, being self-propelled by this fear, and I think about why I started drinking, and it was solely based on a fear that I had, and it's, you know, sometimes in the rooms, people say they'll drink if their shoelace breaks, and I started drinking because I thought that if I was drinking, that I wouldn't become like I wouldn't be made fun of in middle school. Like, I was so afraid of middle school from watching TV. Like, I thought, you know, when you watch TV and they have like the big guy that's kind of overweight that's beating people up in middle school, and I'm like, you know what, and look, you know, I'm 29 years old. I look like I'm 18. Okay, so like at this time I have like bifocals, I have, you know, I'm the skater, and I'm like, if I go to middle school, like, they're gonna kill me. You know, I'm playing the violin like that. I have a nickname, Atom Bob, because I was really interested in the atomic bomb. Like, so I started like everything. Like, within 1 week, I'm drinking, I'm smoking the other stuff, I'm smoking cigarettes, I got a skateboard. You know, I got jeans where I'm like spray painting them and stuff. Like, and this was all decision based on fear. Right, it talks about our resentments are fancied or real, right? I make them up, and our fears are the same thing. I make this stuff up, and then I take action because of the things I make up. And this was the action I took. If I can be a really hard guy, you know, and I'll make fun of other people, you know, I'm funny looking, I'll just make fun of other people, and I'll use all of my God-given skills to drag other people down. And in the process of doing that, I destroyed myself. I grew up in an alcoholic household. In our area, there's a lot of Irish Catholic. So everybody introduced themselves like an Irish Catholic alcoholic. Dad's a drunk, and my mother's a saint. And that's kind of like what it was. And I never wanted to be like my dad. And I can tell you, I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. The obsession was, you know, when I came to AA, people talk about I always obsessed about alcohol. And I was like, I don't know if that's really true, because like when I first started drinking, I would only drink once a month, you know, once every couple weeks. And the more I started to relate back, in the book it talks about raising the bottom for young people, right? And what does it say? We go back through our lives and review them. And my sponsor was right. He said, let's start talking about this stuff. And I remembered, I was like, you know, we're going to drink 3 weeks from now. We're going to go down to the woods behind the Ron McPool. And what's his name's older brother's going to get the beer, right? Now, if he falls through, we got another guy who's going to get it. Now, if he falls through, there's this corner store all the way down in the ghetto where we shouldn't be anyway. And we're going to find our buddy who's the, you know, 13 years old and has a goatee, and we're going to send him in, and we're going to get the booze. Now, like, we had like perfect, like, modeled business plans on how we're going to get alcohol, and I was able to see that was an obsession. That when I drank, I obsessed about the next time I was going to drink, no matter what the time period was between it. And since I've been sober, I've met people that they only drink every like 4 or 5 months, but when they drink, they can't stop. Everything goes to hell again. And I was able to relate. And I had a pretty low bottom, but you know, that's how we think differently. You know, they talk about look for the similarities. We all have the pain. We all have the mental obsession. We all have that voice that tells us, you know, you can drink O'Doul's. You know, I mean, that's what I started drinking O'Doul's. I heard people say they drank for the effect produced by alcohol. I said, no, I drank for the connoisseur. I was a connoisseur of alcohol. I like brandy. I like all different types of things. And so I started drinking O'Doul's, and then I was drinking imported non-alcoholic beverages. And this lasted like 2 weeks. And finally, I wasn't getting the effect produced by alcohol. And I ordered one drink. And I was on parole. And all that was pushed out for the idea that I could have one Miller Lite. And the second drink I ordered was a double Jack and Coke. And the next morning, I was drinking as my mom was pounding on my door. I'm on parole. I'm on IOP. And I'm still drinking. And I went out for a year. And I had my first step experience when I realized that I didn't want to drink tonight because I wanted to get nice and rested so I could go on a 3-day run the next day. And that was my mindset. I just total oblivion. Let me get rest up so I can go kill myself. You know, that's alcoholic thinking. And I couldn't. I picked up the can. I looked at it. It was sweating. And I knew if I drank it, I'd be drinking the next morning. And I worked in the restaurant business, so I had the perfect drinking schedule. And that's what happened. And 2 months later, I had a spiritual experience. I looked in the mirror, and I was crying, and I actually cried out to God. You know, I was the agnostic, and I heard somebody say agnostics hedge their bets. Sometimes they believe in God, and other times they don't. You know, that way, if they ever meet God, they can say, well, you know, I did believe in you, I just, you know, wasn't really sure. And I looked in the mirror, and I knew I was hopeless. I knew I had absolutely no chance of beating this. I only had this idea that, like, if I could angle things a certain way that I would be able to drink. And it hit me. I had that, you know, the cloud of delusion parted for a second. I cried out to God. I said, God, help me. And a girl I was dating woke up out of her sleep and said, we need to get some help. And I've been sober ever since then. I can tell you the next day, like, it was amazing. I woke up the next morning. I felt great. I didn't want to drink. I called a buddy up. I was like, I need some help. Where's the AA meeting? And I go right to AA, and right away I'm like, God's not real. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that. It's so quick. And I started working the steps, not believing in God, but only because I wanted the relief. Like, I believe some of us yearn more for, you know, there's some stuff in the book that kind of classifies the alcoholic and how much the work they'll have to do. But for me, it was like once I stopped drinking, I thought I needed to be on Xanax. My sponsor was like, let's start working these steps first, buddy. And then maybe you do, you know. I sponsor people that take medication. I'm not against that. And what happened was I started working the steps, not believing in God, and I started having an experience. When I was 6 months sober, I took my third step, and I believed in aliens. Like, I would drink and watch History Channel. right? Ancient Aliens. I'm sure people have seen it. And this was like, I can tell you today, I still have some wild beliefs, but thank God for the chapter to the agnostics, because he was able to show how I, you know, it talks about pulling other people down and religious, and like, I had all these wild beliefs of Bigfoot and aliens and everything, and, you know, and yet I'm sitting millions of people that have a faith that works for him, and I'm saying, no, that doesn't work. And I was able to put away my prejudice. Not so much my belief, but my prejudice against that. And I took my third step, and I had a voice come to me as I laid in bed a couple days later and said, stop fighting what these people are telling you in AA. And that was my third step experience. Within that same week, I started praying. Now, you know, people said, put your shoes underneath your bed so you can trick yourself into praying. And I was like, I'm not having any of this stuff. You guys are trying to trick me into praying. And I took that third step, not believing in God, only because that's where we were at. My sponsor said, do you believe? I said, yeah, sure. But my attitude was there. The book constantly talks about if we take a certain attitude towards this. And I had an enthusiasm for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to fall in love with it because it was the last thing, the only choice I had. And from that point on, I mean, I can tell you, man, it's been a rough road. You know, I heard this speaker, the very first speaker CD I heard, some guy picked me up. He said, you're going to be an intergroup rep, which is like H and I. And I said, what's that? He said, don't worry about it, I'll pick you up. And I get in the car, and you know, he's got this Civic, and I get in, and this guy's like, he's got AA on the radio. And I didn't know what this stuff was. I'm like, this guy's hardcore. You know, I didn't know they made this stuff. And the guy says, if the road to your sobriety is smooth, you're on the wrong effing road. And it was like this grizzled voice, and it's this old timer up there that everybody respects. And I was like, yeah, that's right, because this sucks, you know. And but I can tell you that, like, I've always known that the answer is in the steps and in AA. And I took a fifth step with my sponsor, and I felt like crap. And this crazy guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, we call him Fire and Brimstone up there. Like, I can tell you, this guy's been beat up in meetings for the things he says. He gave me a God shot. He would always grab me after this midnight meeting and say, you got to do your fifth step with a priest. And I'd be like, yeah, whatever, buddy. And it was stuck in my head. And I went to this priest at this church that I got thrown out of. I got kicked out of Catholic school in second grade for, like, doing Ninja Turtle skills on people. And I went back to this church that I got kicked out of. And it was stuck in my head. So I go and do this fifth step. And I'm not religious. And I go there, and what I realized is that, like, our fifth step, we're supposed to do it with God. Our sponsor is just a witness. And when I did it with my sponsor, I didn't do it with God. And when I walked in there, I mean, I could talk for an hour about what happened in there. And it was short, and it wasn't anything formal. You know, my sponsor today says, the answer is spiritual practices. My father is sober now after I got sober, and he doesn't go to AA, and he believes in God, and he goes to church. The answer is spiritual practices. You know, I can get caught up in all the literature, and, you know, it says this on page 152, you know what I mean? I can get caught up in that, and that's not the answer is spiritual exercises, right? So I go, and I do this fifth step. I did a four step that wasn't out of the book. It was like an 18-page story of my life, right? But God honored that because of my attitude that I was taking towards this program. I go in there, I tell him, I just say the turbulence in my life, the things I was ashamed of, and he reached out and said, you were always alone, and you're not alone anymore. And that's the answer. I was always alone. I was always alone without God. And I could tell you, I had a white light experience. I walked out of there, I had to shield my eyes from the sun. An hour later, I go to the club to tell everybody what happened to me because I'm so on fire with it, and I get my first sponsee. The guy comes down and says, can you sponsor him? The next day, I tell the guy my fifth step, because when I told my sponsor, he said, you know, one day you're going to have to do this with somebody. Now, what he meant was I was going to have to hear somebody's fifth step. I thought he meant I had to tell somebody my fifth step again. And I was like, what the hell is with this program? And so I get down on my knees in this, I mean, this club is like, this is the front lines. Like, there's people from Yale to jail that can read, cannot. And I get down on my knees in the bathroom, and I ask God, please give me the strength to do this again. I tell this guy my whole fifth step. After 2 hours, he stands up and he puts his hands out and he says, oh my God, you told my exact same story. And he's still sober today. And this was like 3.5 years ago. And I can tell you, when we talk about a psychic change, I never really knew what that was, but today I do. When I look at what happened with the fifth step, when I look at what happened there, I realized that there was something more to life that I've never seen before. When I made amends, you know, my mind, this whole program is counterintuitive to the way I think. When I think about amends, I'm like, I'm going to get arrested. You know, they don't want to hear about it. You know, I'm others. You always hear that. And when I go, something different happens. You know, I made this amends to this girl that I stole $220 from her paycheck. And, you know, God comes to me and it's this little voice and I'm sitting on the toilet, you know, and at work, taking my time off. And I hear this voice like, you have to make this amends. And right away, as soon as I get out, I wash my hands. And I call this girl up. I say, you know, we need to meet up and talk. Like, I need to tell you about something. And we meet up, and she's like, what's this about? And I was like, I stole $220 from you. And she starts crying. And she's tearing up, and she looks at me, and she says, how did you know I needed this money? And the only thing that came out of my mouth was God told me. And she goes on and tells me about how, you know, this is the one that woke up and said, we need to get some help. And she kept drinking. And this is a couple years later. And she's out there. And she said, you know, she lost her job. She's got no money. She's drinking. Her tooth fell out. She's got an exposed nerve. And she tells me that she needs $220 to fix her tooth. And I can tell you that I was just a psychic change right there. Because my mind, like, it'll constantly tell me, this stuff's ridiculous. I don't have to make all these amends. I made amends to people in sixth grade that I made fun of this girl's nose. I used to call her proboscis, right? Years later, I can't get a hold of her. I find her on Facebook. I lay it all out on her feed. I have this intuition. And this is not out of the big book, right? I lay everything out on the feed. And I say, I'm this, that, and I did this to you. I was wrong here. I was... smoking crack, and this is what happened to me. And and she says, this is what she says, people really are good. And then she unfriends me. Right? 5 minutes later, I get an instant message from her friend who saw everything on the feed and says, I can't stop drinking. And she tells me everything. I've switched to wine. Everything out of more about alcoholism. You know, taking a trip, not taking a trip. You know, with or without a solemn oath, all that stuff. And I'm just like, oh my God. And that's why I go to meetings every day. I love Alcoholics Anonymous and everything about it. I'm on my ninth step again. I love the process. You know what I mean? And I really could. I saw the one minute. I really could go on and on. I love these type of groups. And I'll end with this. I was a year and a half sober after this fifth step, and I was resting on my laurels, right? And I go to Icky Pa in 2009, and I'm going through it. I leave work, and I'm like, I'm going down there. Screw it. Like, I need, like, I need to get recharged with some AA. And I go down there, and I think about killing myself on a Saturday night, and it's an atrium. I go up 55 floors. We're drinking all types of Red Bulls. I'm all whacked out. And I go up, and I want to kill myself. I'm hopeless. And I'm sitting there, and I don't even know why I want to kill myself. Well, the only reason was that 5,000 people would remember I'm the guy that killed himself at the AA convention. And I came down off the ledge, and I went to the meeting that night. And this lady's husband had been killed 3 days prior in a motorcycle accident. And she came, and she spoke. And if you've never been to an Icky Pa, people are waving flags from all across the freaking country. People are standing on chairs. And I was all alone in a room of 5,000 people. I wished I was anybody else. And I got a glimmer of hope. And that's what we all have. We're experience, strength, and hope. And I was the second person to sign up for next year's. I was like, I know there's more work I have to do. And I was there the next year in New York City, standing on a chair, screaming my head off. And that's why, today I introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic, because I had not wanted to kill myself since that day. And I was a year and a half sober, you know. And and it's not because of ego or something like that. It's because I haven't wanted to kill myself since then. And that's magical, you know, because I cannot produce that. But thank you for allowing me to speak, and that's all.